Imagine walking into a boardroom that's just filled with veteran mechanical engineers at a massive Shell oil refinery.
Oh, that sounds incredibly intimidating right off the bat.
Right. And your job is to sell them this multi-million-dollar, highly engineered industrial piping system. I mean, we're talking about a system where a single point of failure could literally cause a catastrophic explosion.
Yeah, the stakes are about as high as they get in that environment.
Exactly. So now imagine trying to close that massive deal when your formal educational background is a 1993 degree in psychology.
Oh, wow.
And you spent, the first half of your career selling telecom networks and digital cameras.
I mean, honestly, it sounds like a scenario where you'd just be left right out of the room.
You really would think so.
Yeah, because the traditional expectation is that industrial sales at that specific level are strictly reserved for, well, seasoned engineers who transitioned into business development, not someone selling cameras.
Which is exactly why today's deep dive is so fascinating. We have a very, very unique stack of sources in front of us today for you.
We really do.
We're looking at two distinct 2026 versions of a professional resume, and they belong to Morgan Charles Locast. He's a Houston-based industrial sales leader.
And a highly successful one at that.
Unbelievably successful. Last year alone, this guy generated $25 million in revenue. But what's wild is that one version of his resume is formatted as an analytics version. So it's heavily focused on data and AI tools.
Great.
And then the other one is an executive version, which just highlights leadership and strategy.
You know, presenting two completely different angles of the exact same career is, well, it's a brilliant tactical move in itself.
Yeah, it shows he really gets it.
Exactly. It shows an immediate, sophisticated understanding of whoever happens to be sitting across the table from him.
So our mission today is to deconstruct the anatomy of this $25 million a year rainmaker for you. We're going to explore how someone successfully navigates completely different industries by blending old school, boots on the ground relationship building with cutting edge artificial intelligence and data analytics.
Which is not an easy blend to pull off.
Not at all, because looking at the sheer variety on these resumes, it reads almost like three completely different lives.
It really does.
I mean, jumping from telecom to consumer electronics and finally to heavy industrial piping, it really shouldn't make sense.
On the surface, yeah, it looks chaotic, jumping around like that. But if we actually break down the mechanics of what he's doing, it's a masterclass in adaptability.
A master class. I like that.
Yeah, because the products he sells change drastically, obviously. But the underlying engine that's driving his revenue remains incredibly consistent throughout his entire career.
Okay, let's unpack this. Let's look at that engine. Because I know it's tempting to just jump straight into the flashy AI tools he's using in 2026 to close these massive industrial
Oh,
deals.
absolutely, that's the shiny object.
Right. But if we want to understand why the advanced tech works so well for him today, we really have to look at his foundation.
We have to start at the beginning.
Yeah. His career starts far away from artificial intelligence. He actually holds a Bachelor of Science in Psychology from the University of Houston, and he graduated back in 1993.
A very different era.
Totally. Oh, and he's also a U.S. Army veteran. He was a Specialist E-4 stationed at Fort Hood.
So he enters the workforce with this really potent combination. You have the rigorous discipline of the military, and that's paired with a formal education in human behavior and cognition.
Yeah, but I have to ask though, is psychology degree really the ultimate cheat code for an 85% closing
A
ratio?
cheat code.
Yeah, because his early career numbers from the late 90s to about 2010 are just staggering. He's out there recruiting and training authorized sales reps for SBC, which, we now know as AT&T.
Right, good telecom.
He even founds his own company, DataWaves Technology, and hits over $1 million in revenue in his very first year.
And then there is the Comcast era.
Yes, that's the statistic that totally jumped off the page for me.
It's massive.
It is. In 2009, as a multi-dwelling unit account executive for Comcast, he generated $5.8 million in revenue in a single year,
Just incredible numbers.
bringing in 104 new accounts. But here is the kicker, and this is where I need to push back a little.
Okay, go for it.
He maintained an 85% closing ratio and a 90% retention rate.
Right.
Now, telecom in the late 90s and 2000s was notoriously aggressive. It was the era of like boiler rooms and nonstop cold calling. So were these early wins just raw, unadulterated hustle?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you might be able to hustle your way to a high closing ratio,
Huh.
just through sheer volume and aggressive pitching.
Just dialing for dollars.
Exactly. But you simply cannot hustle your way to a 90% retention rate. It's impossible.
Ah, because I'll just leave.
Precisely. Clients who are bullied into a sale will churn the absolute moment their contract is up. So closing nearly $6 million during the 2009 economic downturn and keeping those clients proves an intrinsic ability to uncover real needs and build deep trust.
Okay, so the psychology degree isn't just a fun piece of trivia sitting at the bottom of the resume. It's actually doing heavy lifting.
It is the absolute bedrock of his relationship management. Just think about the telecom landscape back then.
It was the Wild West.
It was. When he was market mapping to identify reseller gaps for data waves, he wasn't just looking at geographic zip codes on a map. He was looking at human behavior. He
Wow.
was identifying where business owners were underserved and, frankly,
I'm
terrified.
terrified. Terrified of what?
The technology, I mean, in the early 2000s, terms like VoIP, MPLS, or Frame Relay, that sounded like alien weaponry to a small business owner.
That's true. It was all so new.
These are essentially complex methods of routing data and replacing old-school physical phone lines with digital
Which
networks.
is a huge shift.
Exactly. If you own a mid-sized business, transitioning to an MPLS network means ripping out the very communication backbone of your company.
And if it fails?
If it fails, your business goes dark.
No,
You
no.
can't process payments. You can't take calls. That causes massive anxiety.
That makes a lot of sense. So Morgan's background taught him how to listen naturally and translate that highly complex, anxiety-inducing technology into a simple solution, something that made the client feel safe.
Precisely. He wasn't selling multi-protocol label switching.
Right.
He was selling peace of mind. That is why they bought. And more importantly, that is the mechanism behind why 90% of them stayed.
The product was technical, but the sale was deeply human. I love that.
It's a great way to put it.
But here's the problem. You cannot clone a silver tongue.
No, you can't.
Having a deep understanding of people only scales so far because they're only 24 hours in a day. You can only physically have so many deep trust-building
You
conversations.
definitely hit a limit.
Right. If you are going to manage massive multi-state territories, charm eventually hits a ceiling.
Which forces a transition.
Yeah.
You reach a point where, to grow revenue exponentially, you have to stop relying purely on your own interpersonal skills.
You have to build a machine.
Yes, you have to start optimizing the systems that surround the entire sales process.
Here's where it gets really interesting. We see that shift clearly in the sources. Moving into this 2011 to 2022 era, his resume just transforms.
It becomes all about the process.
Completely. I'm looking at his time at Capital Communications around 2014. He steps in as the director of sales and marketing, but he doesn't just hire more salespeople to hit the phones harder.
No, he takes a step back.
He conducts a full operational analysis, and he realizes their legacy billing system is completely dragging them down. To me, this is like a mechanic rebuilding the car's engine while it's driving down the highway.
That's a great analogy. He identified an operational bottleneck that was bleeding resources.
Yeah, so he replaces that old system with a cloud-based SaaS platform software as a service.
Which was huge at the time.
Huge. That single move saved the company $60,000 annually, which the resume notes was a 90% cost reduction.
And he didn't stop there.
No. While he's implementing that software, he redesigns the intake, the onboarding, and the customer service coaching processes. The result, he grows the new subscriber rate by 45%.
He is simultaneously reducing operational drag while increasing the engine's horsepower.
Exactly.
And what's crucial for you to notice here is that he begins applying this same process-oriented, data-driven methodology to massive consumer electronics territories.
Like his time with Canon and Motorola.
Yes.
For Canon, he took an underperforming territory and elevated it to the top four nationally out of all US markets. The resume specifically mentions he did this by tracking sell-through data to optimize in-store placement across major retail chains like Best Buy and Office Depot.
Which is a brilliant strategy.
But wait, break that down for me really quick. What exactly is sell-through data, and why does that elevate a territory to the top four?
Sure, so it's a critical distinction in retail. Sell-in data is just what Best Buy purchased from Canon to put in their warehouse.
Okay.
It doesn't mean anyone actually bought the camera. It's just inventory sitting in the back room. Sell-through data tracks the product that actually crossed the cash register and walked out the front door in a customer shopping bag.
Ah, so it tells you what the consumer is actually doing, not just what the corporate buyer guessed they would do.
Exactly. By analyzing sell through data, Morgan could see that, say, a specific camera model was flying off the shelves in suburban Best Buy locations, but it was just collecting dust in urban office depots.
So he didn't just tell his reps to sell harder.
Right. Instead of just pushing his reps to sell harder everywhere, he used the data to surgically reallocate inventory and redesign the displays exactly where they would have the highest conversion rate.
He let the dashboard tell him where the gold was?
Exactly.
And he scales that even further with Motorola. He's managing over 400 retail locations across Southeast Texas.
That's a massive footprint.
It is. He's analyzing sales data to prioritize high opportunity accounts, and he's deploying digital learning platforms to train local retail teams to position Motorola against giants like Apple and Samsung.
Which is an uphill battle.
A huge uphill battle. But wait, 400 locations? Managing 400 retail locations sounds like a logistical nightmare. How does someone effectively prioritize that without burning out? I mean, I get overwhelmed just managing my own email inbox.
You do it by entirely removing guesswork from your logistics.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where his technical toolkit takes center stage.
Okay.
During this era, he becomes certified as a Salesforce administrator, becomes proficient in Tableau, which is this really powerful data visualization software.
Right, the dashboards.
Yes. If you have 400 stores, you do not visit them equally.
Yeah.
You look at your Tableau dashboard, and it highlights the 10 specific stores that have a sudden dip in accessory attach rates, despite having high foot traffic.
So you only deploy your resources to the exact points of friction.
He stopped just closing the deals himself and started engineering the environment so that his teams and channel partners could close deals automatically.
I see.
To use a metaphor, he stopped trying to drive every single train and instead focused on building a perfect set of rails. The data told the trains exactly where to go.
Oh, I really like that framing. Building the rails.
It's exactly what he was doing.
So let's look at where those rails lead, because this brings us to the climax of the resume.
The modern era.
Yeah. We have a professional with a foundation in human psychology and military discipline. He spent a decade mastering complex CRM data, operational efficiency, and territory turnaround.
Oh, building up to this.
Right. What happens when you take that deep psychological understanding of people, combine it with the ruthless efficiency of process management, and apply it to a heavy-hitting industrial market?
You get a $25 million a year industrial heavyweight.
Let's look at his current role. This is from December 2022 to the present. He is a senior account manager at Piping Technology and Products.
A very serious industrial player.
Very serious. In 2024, he is named Salesman of the Year, generating over $25 million in annual revenue across a three-state territory: Southeast Texas, Louisiana, and the Northeast.
And the products he's selling are no joke.
Oh, not at all. And I have to admit, I didn't know what most of these were before looking at this deep dive.
I don't blame you.
He's selling U.S. Bellows expansion joints, Fronex Sway braces, hot and cold pipe shields, and snubbers.
These are highly complex, mission-critical, engineered solutions.
They really are. I actually looked up what a snubber and an expansion joint do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so when you have a massive refinery processing chemicals or liquid natural gas, the pipes get incredibly hot, and metal expands when it gets
hot. Yeah, it's that physics, right.
Right. So if you have hundreds of feet of thick steel pipe expanding and it's bolted down rigidly, the thermal pressure will literally tear the pipeline apart.
It'll cause a catastrophic rupture.
Exactly. So an expansion joint is this highly engineered flex point that absorbs that thermal growth. And a snubber acts almost like a seatbelt or a shock absorber for a massive pipe during a seismic event or a sudden pressure surge.
You are literally selling the structural safety and continuity of a billion-dollar facility.
Yes. And look at his target clients. He is selling these components into refineries, carbon capture facilities, and power generation markets. He's dealing with absolute giants: Shell, Phillips 66, Cheniere, KBR, Woodplack, and Worley.
Those last three, KBR, Wood, and Worley, are what the industry calls EPCs, engineering, procurement, and construction firms.
Ah. Oh,
they are the massive contractors hired by companies like Shell to actually design and build the refineries.
So what does this all mean? Because this brings me back to the scenario we opened with. I am genuinely amazed by this industry leap. How does someone jump from selling dish network and digital cameras to successfully pitching engineered pipe snubbers to Shell without an engineering degree?
What's fascinating here is that we see the ultimate synthesis of his entire career path. He doesn't need to out-engineer the engineers.
Oh.
The resumes explicitly detail how he bridges this technical gap. He uses AI tools like Claude, ChatGPT, and Copilot, integrating them alongside his CRM data.
I really need you to break the mechanics of that down for me. We hear about AI all the time, obviously, but how specifically does ChatGPT help sell a pipe support to a liquid natural gas plant?
Okay, think about the immense complexity of a billion-dollar EPC project. There are dozens of contractors, constantly shifting timelines, and massive regulatory and environmental hurdles.
Tons of moving parts.
Exactly. It takes years before they even break ground.
Mm.
Morgan uses AI to ingest and make sense of massive amounts of market data.
What kind of data is the AI actually looking at, though?
It could be municipal permit approvals, quarterly earnings call transcripts for the EPCs, environmental impact studies, or public project pipelines.
Oh, wow.
Right. A human being couldn't possibly read through thousands of pages of municipal filings every week to track a single project.
No, you'd go crazy.
But he can prompt Claude or Copilot to continuously monitor these massive data sets and flag exactly when a project transitions from the design phase into the procurement phase.
Ah, he is using the AI to solve the timing problem.
The resumes actually state this verbatim. He uses these tools to time outreach and proposal delivery.
Wow.
The AI analyzes the data and essentially tells him, based on the permit approval from last Tuesday, Worley will need to begin sourcing expansion joints for the Louisiana facility in exactly 3 weeks.
That is wild. He lets the AI do the incredibly dense, heavy lifting of market mapping. It basically finds the needle in the haystack of the entire industrial supply chain.
And this is where the magic happens. Once the AI identifies the exact right moment to strike, his human relationship skills take over.
The 1993 psychology degree.
Yes, that intrinsic ability to listen, translate complex anxieties, and build trust that he honed back in the Comcast days that kicks in exactly at the point of maximum leverage.
Because he walks into the room already knowing exactly what they need and exactly when they need it.
He bypasses the cold calling phase entirely.
That's so smart.
He appears precisely when the EPC is feeling the pain of needing to source these critical components. He doesn't need to know the complex thermodynamics of the refinery. He just needs to know that the lead engineer is stressed about sourcing a reliable snubber by next month.
Right.
He then possesses the soft skills, the empathy, and the operational process to make that engineer feel completely confident in choosing a solution.
It is the perfect marriage of data and psychology. He uses AI to bypass the technical gatekeeping of the industry and then relies on purely human skills to actually close the deal.
Exactly.
And that is why he generated $25 million and took home Salesman of the Year.
It's a beautifully constructed feedback loop. The AI points the way, the human builds the bridge.
Which I think connects this entire career breakdown directly back to you listening to this right now. If you've ever felt overwhelmed by keeping up with your industry, or if you're trying to figure out how to scale your own business without burning out, Morgan's resumes provide a highly actionable blueprint.
The blueprint is surprisingly clear once you deconstruct the eras of his life.
Yeah, it really is.
First, you must master the human element. You have to understand human behavior and how to genuinely build trust.
Right.
Second, you build efficient systems, dashboards, and processes to scale those efforts, building the rails, like you said.
Right.
And finally, you adopt the latest technology, like AI, to multiply your reach and perfect the timing of your execution.
You don't have to be the deepest technical expert in every single aspect of your field, as long as you know how to leverage the right tools to find the opportunity and you have the human skills to close it, you can transition into almost any arena.
Which brings us to a final, rather provocative thought for the future of work. We just traced a career that began with a foundation in psychology. Yet his crowning $25 million achievement relies heavily on cutting-edge artificial intelligence tools. This raises an important question. As AI increasingly masters the hard data, the market analytics, the permit tracking, and the exact timing of the perfect pitch, what happens to the human?
That is the question.
Will the raw, purely human psychology of building trust become the absolute most valuable commodity left in the business world?
Think about that. When the machines can reliably tell us exactly what to sell, who to sell it to, and exactly when to sell it, the only differentiator left is the actual human making the connection.
Yeah.
It makes you realize that maybe that predictable linear career path, you know, staying in one industry your whole life, isn't just outdated.
It might be a liability.
Right. Maybe the real career ladder is simply knowing how to remain the crucial, empathetic human in the loop, no matter what kind of complex machinery the world is building around you. We'll leave you to mull that over.